The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Hallihan, CEO of Polarin Imaging, POLX is ticker. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you, Justin, as always.
Yeah, and it's nice for you to catch up because, of course, we are basically, I suppose, 2 weeks away now from the big date, the date, the 5th of October, where you're hoping to get FDA approval, hoping to get that. And so let's get straight into it. We've got a lot of questions for investors, but how is it going? Is it progressing as planned? You know, is there any delays going on or what's happening there?
Yeah. So as you would know, kind of the closer we get to this and to being approved at some level, the less I can say about it. I think everybody who's a student of the process understands that. But I can kind of flip to the other side of the coin and ask rhetorical questions that observation can answer. So everybody understands in cases like this that the FDA puts forward a date and then at the point where they would become convinced that they couldn't meet the date for any reason, they would be obligated to declare that. Mm-hmm. And so if they did that, then I, of course, would be immediately required to pass that along via an RNS to all the investors. And the observation that I have not done that would lead a reasonable and prudent person to conclude that I have not been notified of such a thing. So, you know, it is what it is. Regulators regulate. We know that. We don't engage in predicting their behavior, but we certainly do observe it and are mindful of it. And so what I can say is, to the best of our knowledge, we're on schedule, and the list of things remaining to be done is quite short.
Yeah. And to be fair, you know, I think someone came up with an article I saw online saying that even during COVID, which of course is you know, special times here with lots of applications going on, I think the FDA are on time for 90% plus of the answers back to people who have sent applications in. So that's good going even in these times, isn't it? So they're very efficient, you know.
I think there are these kind of anecdotal, humorous perceptions that people have of governmental agencies where life is pretty easy. And I can say that our observation, both in the case of our submission here and with the consultants that we use in the space, is those guys are working as hard as anybody in industry. Yeah. They're traveling, they're doing inspections, they're doing all kinds of things. And of course, the COVID situation has created a whirlwind of kind of new running rate kind of applications to them, which even if kind of just superficially ridiculous submissions, all have to be analyzed and responded to. So those guys are running hard and doing an amazing job, in our opinion.
Yeah. And in your post-period half-year report here, you said frequent interactions with the FDA as they review the NDA. And is that still going on? I mean, because last time we spoke, you said, it's a back-and-forth thing. They ask questions, we collaborate with them. Is that still happening?
So the way that goes is, and you could imagine, anybody could imagine that the Gantt chart for a drug device combination approval is a pretty big spreadsheet, right? Mm-hmm. And so that includes all of the activities in the drug side, all of the activities in the device side, and then all of the kind of, again, for lack of a better way to put it, the mechanical side of this, which is, you know, inspecting physical facilities in the real world for proper behavior and documentation and quality systems and those kinds of things for everyone who would be a supplier or a provider to us. And of course, all that stuff has to be done. And so every time any of those things is either planned or executed, anybody would guess that it creates a flurry of interrogatories and Q&A because everything isn't self-evident. And so all of that happens. And so, continuous back and forth with them on the way to approval. I will say that of late, kind of declining in volume, which you would expect as well.
Yeah, exactly, because I suppose everything's in. But I mean, I was reading, a note to your research, and they're saying that, you know, FDA approvals, and because you've gone through trials, of course, has been designed by the FDA with you as well. But it's quite low risk because with drugs, new drugs, of course, there's always the worry and the risk. But the drug here is xenon gas, and the safety profile of that is known very well. And your the device part of the drug device obviously works. So it's quite a low risk FDA approval, and I think it was a 90% chance probability. Do you see that as well as being quite low risk compared to most of the applications for, say, drugs or...
Yeah, I think in the classic sense of this, and I'll do the analysis there, and say, look, the way that drugs get approved are safety and efficacy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the safety side is fundamentally how do these drugs enter and leave the human body? What do they do while they're there? And then what is the utility or efficacy of the drug in dealing with the thing that you're trying to accomplish, right? And so when you look at our submission, and I'm not saying anything that I haven't said in our investor presentations before, when you look at the safety side of this, and in particular, when you look at it in comparison to things that are already approved, I mean, most of the other things used as medical imaging contrast agents in MR are injectable kind of chelated heavy metals that have a special purpose in imaging, but their entry and exit to the human body is difficult. Mm. They involve other organ systems. They involved, you know, days of time in getting out and those kinds of things. And happily, in our case, being an inert noble gas that travels by diffusion, that, you know, it goes in, it comes out through the pulmonary cycle. Mm. And I think from that point of view, combined with being an inert noble gas, I like the situation compared to the sphere of things that the agency usually sees and deals with in imaging agent.
Yeah.
So happy there. With respect to efficacy, the clinical trial was a head-to-head, equivalence trial. We demonstrated the thing that we set out to demonstrate. And so when you do kind of what you said you would do, then that becomes relatively straightforward. And that's not to say, the road to approval is strewn with things that happen in final reviews. And so anything can happen. But so far, and based on the kind of fundamentals here, we like our position with respect to the submission.
Yeah. Okay, let's go through some investor submitted questions. I understand there's many of these you may not be able to answer or give as much detail as the person who put the question to you would like, because, of course, some of it may be inside information or unknown, but let's have a go anyway. Here we go. So someone says they're interested in understanding the rollout process. How quickly can they commission systems, and how many systems worth of stock have they got in reserve waiting for the green light? This is obviously assuming FDA approval.
Yeah, so we can't be terribly specific there, but I can say that that our plans support the research and the commitments we've made to investors. So that arithmetic is public knowledge. You can take a look at it and say, what I can say is we intend to do that.
Yeah.
I think we're happy with our situation with our contract manufacturer. We like the guys. We think they're competent. And so we're awaiting kind of the starting pistol so that we can get to work on that. We do have in the background still, as you would know, and as we've disclosed before, we do still have a pre-existing pipeline that has to do with folks that have grants having mm-hmm. nothing to do with FDA approval or commercialization. And we're, you know, kind of set to satisfy those as well. So kind of status quo in that regard.
Yeah, okay. And so someone says there, sort of supplement here, you talk about targeting the top 100 sort of hospitals in the US, and they ask how fast you can do that. But I suppose that's also in the research note, isn't it?
So, yeah, but, it's public knowledge. I think the timeline, just from recollection, is something like 5 years all in.
2025, I think you've got 100 machines there. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're at N equals 25 today or 23 or so. And so, mm-hmm. the gap there. You can kind of do the arithmetic.
Yeah. Next question is, I know you're focused on the USA first. I don't know if you can answer this, but how long before you turn your attention to other areas, the rest of the world?
Yeah, so we've also spoken in various forums about this publicly, and it goes something like this. It always goes better when you approach next country regulators if you have approval in the home market first.
Yeah.
So, you know, the advice of all of our consultants and our strategic investors, for that matter, is get the U.S. approval, then start the process. And so that is what we'll be doing. Mm-hmm. You know, the two next we've made no kind of secrets of. They would be Canada, where we already have a cluster of systems and even more kind of underway, and then Europe, which is historically kind of the next the next most apt market to adapt kind of high technology MR imaging techniques. And then after that, as economic value would sequence them.
Yeah. Next question is, are you talking to manufacturers, OEMs, to get the hardware fitted as part of OEM's manufacturing process?
Sure. So to be clear, and we've also talked about this in some detail before, and that is our part of the beauty of our FDA approval and submission is the fact that our system is not connected to the MR machine. They're independent in that regard. And so that's a happy thing for us in terms of those kinds of things. With regard to the setup here from a kind of marketing point of view, you would know, and I think we've already discussed this as well, our KOLs are their KOLs, right? The best and brightest are universal. They're not topic specific. And so the leading edge of MR research is also the leading edge of hyperpolarized noble gas imaging in MRI research. And so those maps, if you slide them as transparencies over top, neatly overlay the high-end KOLs for GE, Siemens, and Philips as well. So happily, we get along with those guys quite well. They're kind of enabling this because it drives sale of equipment for them. Mm-hmm. It drives demand for scanning on MR machines, which drives absorption of capacity, which is good for them. So all of the needles on all of the compasses kind of line up pretty neatly here going forward. And we've had long-term relationships with those guys from the outset because we're sitting on top of their customers. We also have said a couple of times that we've got equipment already deployed on GE, Siemens, and Philips scanners already. So there's no mystery there. There's not a lot of discovery that has to happen. I think we're pretty happy about the setup there.
Yeah. Next question is, and I sort of know the answer to this, but nice to hear it again. Are there clinical applications beyond pulmonary disease that Polarian could have potential applications in?
Actually, the one that we've talked about for pulmonary vascular disease. So that is the ability to investigate things like pulmonary arterial hypertension by studying xenon in the capillaries of the alveolar walls. And so we published those results in peer-reviewed articles, made those presentations at conferences. And that, of course, although it's part of pulmonary function in medicine, that actually resides in cardiology. So that's probably the nearest, biggest kind of adjacent application in another indication for us. So very happy to be exploring that because those forms of hypertension, in contrast to the general case where your primary care doc can put a pressure cuff around your arm and measure your, quote, blood pressure, unquote, for the vessels that exist only in between the heart and lung, those are inaccessible for non-invasive inspection, except perhaps by us. So we'll see how that unfolds, but very excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Next question is, how involved are Bracco and Newcomb? Have they played a role in FDA or commercial strategy? First of all, if people are not aware, can you explain who they are, Bracco and Newcomb, please, Richard?
Yeah, of course. So Newcomb Isotopes, the German company, are a company who specialize in the global sourcing of isotopes of various elements that have commercial value in industry and medicine. And so they were one of the folks that we found very early on to supply xenon 129, because xenon 129, of course, has to be separated from air and from xenon itself in bulk in an isotopic process. And that's not something you can get at the corner drugstore. So they, I think, very early on saw where this might go and the strategic importance of it. And so they became key investors in the early rounds, kind of allowing the Plarium story to happen in some ways, and have continued to come along since. Very happy about that. Our other strategic investor is Bracco. Bracco is a large global manufacturer of contrast agents of all kinds in medical imaging, not just MR. They're a big global company, billions of dollars top line, big in Europe, big in the U.S., and big in the Asia Pacific space. So they actually also looked at this not so much in a kind of supply chain kind of way, but from an R&D perspective, strategically, one of the biggest alternative MR contrast agents in development anywhere. And so lots of people are continuously trying to invent new ones or refine old ones or adapt them to certain clinical applications, but they all tend to center in the injectable IV contrast agent space and mostly centered around gadolinium, which is the kind of classic platform for MR contrast agents. And I think just strategically, they saw this move on the chessboard as being a possible place to keep an eye on. And so they did make the initial investment and have participated in the succeeding rounds as well, and participate vigorously on our board in helping us kind of plan the right way, to think about investors in the right way. It's been just wonderful having them on our board.
Yeah, yeah. So they've been a big, well, they've had the foresight because, of course, they know the industry, but they've helped a lot with you know, guiding your path, have they?
Well, they actually, you know, it's a great relationship in that regard, in that we have discussions with their medical affairs and regulatory folks. They, of course, present to the same committees that we do in the regulatory space. So they've done all this, you know, hundreds of times in all of the geographic territories kind of on the planet. So great experience set. You know, you can find out more in a phone call than you could find out with, you know, months worth of work with, you know, consultants or your own independent research. So it's been very efficient in that regard, and a free and open discussion on the kind of scientific side. So very happy about all that.
Yeah. Next question is, if a bigger company made an offer for the company, for Plarium, after directly after FDA approval, would you consider it, or do you intend to commercialize the company successfully first?
Well, I'm sure that all of your listeners know that we would be required to consider it. You can't not consider it. Mm-hmm. I think the duty of all boards is to advocate for shareholders. That's why we're here. And so the board would certainly consider any kind of proposal that anyone made. There are hurdles for accepting any proposal. And they could only be satisfied by meeting the requirements of what we imagine all investors would be. And we would have advice and our own opinions about all of that. So that's simply, you know, a day in the life of a public company, right?
Mm, yeah.
Would be a great compliment. We'd be, you know, always listening to any of those kinds of things. It's our duty to do that. At the moment, we think there's a tremendous amount of value yet to be created in Plarium. But by definition, you know, the market value, the market speaks on what the value of any enterprise is. And so so that's how that process works. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, yeah. Can you describe the competitive positioning of Plarium, i.e., Who does he see? Who does Rich see as competitors? And how long do you think you will have or stay ahead of the field if there is no Hatch-Waxman protection? Because you've applied for that avenue that gives you, is it 5 to 7 years if you get that?
Yeah, that's right. The kind of legal grant is five, but the grant is the grant and the regulation is tied to what is called the Orange Book. The Orange Book contains all the patents surrounding your technology. Some of those have longer or shorter lifespans than the 5 years. So typically the thing in practice runs 5 to 7. But of course, that from our point of view, that's simply a kind of happy regulatory serendipity. Nobody plans a business on that. From our point of view, the best defense is always a high velocity offense on the commercialization and marketing side. And so we would be happy to have it if it's granted. If it's not, it doesn't change our plans a bit. Mm-hmm. And we'll be off and running trying to build a gigantic competitive advantage in the marketplace before anybody else could get trialed, submitted, or approved.
Yeah, good answer. And by the way, if you get FDA approval on the 5th, when is the Hatch-Waxman announced? At the same date?
Yeah, typically it's the pair. You know, regulators can do what they please, but we would ordinarily expect those things to happen kind of contemporaneously.
Okay. And the final question, Richard, you can let your imagination run wild here and your ambition, but it says, where do you see the company in 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, so I think the research note is fairly straightforward in that the early stages of this will be spent in the high end of academic medicine, because not only is there things to be discovered and understood about this, and everyone also understands that there's a big difference between doing research and treating patients who have problems, right? Those are two different activities. So there's quite a bit of discovery that happens, particularly in the U.S. healthcare space, with developing clinical pathways, education and training, holding fellowship programs and education for clinicians among the sites, and kind of bringing this fully into the clinical practice of medicine, which best happens at the high end of kind of academic discovery and medicine. Everybody also has seen kind of numerous kinds of things like this, where succeeding evolutions of the product, I mean, it's not an iPhone, but it certainly will have kind of an evolving life, where we have a machine that's presently useful in the market segment of the high end of academic medicine. It would be no surprise to anyone that you always have the obligation to develop cheaper, better, faster models of this that would be more ubiquitously deployable, not only in the geographic markets of the world, but in the economic market segments of the US. And we certainly would plan to go and do that. And then basically just unfolding this kind of three-dimensional chessboard that we have and moving all these pieces towards new indications in cardiology, new indications in other places, and just seeing where all this goes. We're literally on the tiniest of the sharp front end of this. I think there will be discovery. There are things that we plan. There are things that we will do because we discover them. We're kind of both kind of plan sensitive and opportunistic at the same time. There's a bunch of things that I'm sure that we will discover as we roll this out.
Yeah, excellent stuff, Richard. Good to chat to you. So essentially, you're happy with what's going on, and you're quietly confident in the company, yeah?
Yeah, I think we look at this always with respect to, you know, people can bring new products in the market, and the question is, how different is this than the current standard of care or use? Is it a little bit better? Is it significantly better? Is it, you know, there really isn't anything else that does this? And I think we see ourselves in that category. So the degree of difference is always important. The second term in the equation is, just in a hand-waving way, what is the scale of the opportunity here? And pulmonary disease is a half a billion people on Earth who are presently, you know, being treated with spirometry. So just love getting up in the morning to that setup, Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff, Richard. It's good to chat to you. And hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be the big old approved stamp on the application there, and we'll be talking about rolling out on a commercial basis. But it's very good to chat to you. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thanks for your time, Justin, always. Have a good day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.